This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back, you guys. I'm so sore today, and all I did was a 30-minute Peloton. I'm such a wimp. I'm so glad you guys are tuning in today because this one is so unbelievable when it comes to dreaming, right? I mean, if you've got a dream, say, for example, of becoming a famous athlete, that would not be me because a 30-minute Peloton class is killing me. But if you wanted to be a star athlete, you got to have grit and determination to get there. But you also have to endure unbelievable physical pain. I mean, playing with pulled muscles and shredded tendons is pretty much par for the course for pro football, tennis, and baseball players. And I once met a National Hockey League Stanley Cup winner who played his final two games of the Stanley Cup with broken bones. Okay, that would not be me. Anyway, he did it. That's why the shelf life of pro athletes is so short. According to Statista, pro football players last an average of just 3.3 years in their career. That's it. But if you think hockey and football players have it rough, try being one of the pros on Dancing with the Stars. They fight through broken toes, sprained ankles, and exhaustion, all while wearing high heels and smiling. Many of them fight through it all for a limited number of years, but my guest today, well, I'm just going to call her a unicorn. Cheryl Burke lasted 26 seasons on the hit ABC dance competition show. She was the first female professional dancer to win the show and the first pro to win two consecutive seasons. She is a study in resilience. So how did she tango, cha-cha, waltz, and samba her way to winning mirror balls and capturing the hearts of millions of viewers for so many years? It wasn't just broken bones or training celebrities born with two left feet that Burke had to endure. She danced through a broken heart, a broken marriage, and long-buried abuse that finally had nowhere to go but out in the open. Cheryl, welcome to Everyone Talks to Liz. I'm so excited to hear your story.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for that beautiful intro.
Oh, listen, we were so psyched because everybody here at Fox is like a huge fan of the show, obviously, but you are a standout in all of this. And we thought, what's her backstory? You know, I mean, when did you first decide I want to be a dancer?
Oh, wow. Okay. So my mother, she was born in the Philippines. And even prior to me being born, you know, she came here to the United States, and she actually built from the ground up herself. So right then and there, I had a beautiful role model of endurance and someone who just never gave up. You know, she went through a divorce with my father when I was 2 years old. And my mom was always wanted to be a dancer, but could never afford it in the Philippines. And, you know, she just thought, why not try me into different extracurricular activities? So she did everything with me from like soccer, horseback riding, dance. And I would say that most likely dance was the one thing I never complained about. So I was always, you know, a dancer at heart, I guess. And it definitely, I believe, is hereditary. My mom loves to dance. I mean, she started dancing too when she could afford it. And, you know, she put me in ballet from 4 to 11. And then, you know, I literally grew out of my tights. I mean, I developed very early at a young age, at 9 years old. And I just felt like I didn't fit in. And my mother remarried my stepfather, who I call my dad to this day. He's a great man. And they wanted to find a family sport to do. So we tried golf, and that clearly didn't work. So we then tried ballroom dancing, but it took me a while to get, you know, that thought out of my head that ballroom was only for old people, until I saw kids my age in the Bay Area where I'm from, you know, dance and wear the costumes, wear the glitz and glam. And I was like, oh, sign me up. And so, and this is my personality. I you know, ever since I was a teenager, I guess, is just, if this is what I want, this is what I'm going to get, and nothing's going to stop me.
Wait, have you seen these kids on TikTok, these tiny kids who do ballroom dancing? Oh, my gosh. And they're so good. And I'm like, I hate you. I can't do that.
You know what's so funny is that you guys are just seeing this for the first time, but that those are the kids. Those are the people that I saw when I was also a kid. You know, like this has been it, and that's the best time to do it when you are, you know, about to get into become a teenager, I guess. And that's when your brain, you know, you're able to retain all that information. And I think that's how everyone's groomed as far as like pro athletes go, right? When you start at a young age.
But Cheryl, how does it go from a hobby to, geez, I'd like to make a living from this?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I don't know how open I can be here on this show. I'm pretty sure as open as possible,
Yes,
as you had said
please.
earlier. You know, so before I even started ballroom, you know, there was a I went through child abuse. I got sexually molested by a family friend who drove me and my stepsister around. Because my Filipina nanny, because my mom was busy creating this business, so she was almost working 24 hours a day, and so we needed to obviously, you know, have people to help around the house, get me to school, and get my stepsister to school. And it's interesting how, you know, for me, I guess dance was my outlet of as far as expressing myself and you know, the therapeutic aspects of movement in general. But obviously, I had no idea about that when I was so young. But I would say that. You know, that took a huge, I think it shaped me to who I am, obviously today, but it also really gave me an outlet. So dance, I think because of the trauma that happened, my brain in fight, flight, or freeze focused on whatever made me feel good at that time. And it was definitely dance. And that was my way of expressing myself because the English language to be able to communicate my feelings, it wasn't possible back then, though my mom put me in therapy and I'm still in therapy to this day, actually. But it has, dance was always an outlet for me. And that's why I say dance has saved my life in so many ways.
That's amazing to hear because some people shut down, some people turn inward, some people take their own lives,
Yes.
or they are damaged for life and they can't
Absolutely.
face the world. They will hide. They can't even answer the door when the pizza delivery guy comes. They're just so
Yeah.
horrified by what happened to them, and that is an actual true story. There was a
Yes, it is.
famous hockey player for the Boston Bruins who just stopped showing up to practice and the team was like, dude, you got to show up. And it turned out he had been abused by a little league hockey coach back in the day in Canada. And it bubbles up. So,
It does.
you bury it for a while. And at least as I'm hearing you say, the burying of it led you to something that was very beautiful. And that was dedicating yourself to dance. But I'll go back to that original question. How do you go from that to I can make money doing this because that's hard. That's the trick.
Well, you know, I always said to my mom that I would love to. My mom was very strict with me. So, you know, I come from the ultimate dance mom, as I have always said, that she made sure that I, you know, my grades were intact. And if they weren't, then I wasn't going to be traveling the world to all these competitions. And I used to spend my summers in England and train with the very best back in the day. That's where everyone was as far as coaches go and where you want to succeed. And so one time I just knew, you know what? I don't care if my grades are not good. I'm going to make my own money. So me and my partner at the time, we literally had a boom box and boom box because this was in the 90s and we were
I've
wearing
been there, honey. I've been
Adidas.
there.
We were wearing those Adidas rip-away pants and some Campisio boots. We hired one of the like a kid that we knew, and as we were dancing on the streets in the middle of Union Square, we made $2,000. And so I got my we got ourselves to England. So I
What?
think it was then and there that I realized, okay, well, this could be a future.
And a future, a present. It's unbelievable what happened to you as you were working your way toward doing this. And then suddenly, how did the Dancing with the Stars opportunity come up?
So that's an interesting question. So my mom, in a way, was wanting to groom me to take over her company, obviously. And you know, for me, I was never book smart, I would say. I mean, I think now is different. I'm very curious. It's just I'm a curious person. And you know, back then it was like I only wanted to dance. And for me, it was like dreading. I was dragging my feet to school. But you know, at the end of the day, it was interesting because My mom has always said dancers make no money. Like she made that very clear. She's like, you want to be able to make money in your sleep. And if you can't make money in your sleep and you have to be the only, you're the only person, you can't have like a company of other people, of other dancers work for you. Because at the end of the day, when you're coaching somebody, you know, it's you they want to be coached by. So it's not like the people that have trained under you. So I understood that philosophy, but then I had no idea. My goal was never to be on television. My goal was very, it was very focused on just becoming a world champion. And
Sure.
so I had turned professional in my dancing career, my competitive dancing career, that is, when I was 18 or 19. And then there was the first season that aired on dancing, on ABC, on Dancing with the Stars. And a lot of my colleagues obviously were a part of it. And I was like, oh, this show is just not. I was thinking to myself, obviously, that this show was not going to last more than a season, right? I was like, this is crazy. Like, how many more celebrities would want to come on a show like this and be so vulnerable? And so then after the second season, you know, I got approached to, I guess, come and do an audition. And they actually even said, at the time, I was living in Harlem. You know, I was a starving dancer living in Harlem with my new pro partner, who I also was in a romantic relationship with. Thank God now I can say this. Thank God things weren't working out, because if they were, I probably would have turned down this opportunity. Or, you know, if he would have said, don't do it, I probably would have never taken that chance. And, you know, it's interesting. My whole identity back then, before I'd even moved to LA, I was very shy. You know, the ballroom world is interesting because, you know, the man, it is still like this. And that's the beauty of this art, is like the man leads and the woman follows. You know, it's very old school. Now, to execute to the speed and the precision of ballroom dancing, that has to happen. Okay, so that is what it is. But in real life, back in the 90s, it was still like that. So I was never asked for my opinion. I was obviously recovering from the trauma. I, you know, was just very shy, and I was never this opinionated like I am today, or outspoken even. I really didn't even know what my favorite color was.
Well,
So when I went
can I
on this
stop you there?
audition,
Can I stop you there? This is important. I want my listeners to seize upon this. You actually can change yourself if you want to badly enough. I don't know.
of
I
course.
forget if I've told our listeners before. My parents were Canadian born. I was raised very Canadian, like be very polite. Don't get up in people's faces. Maybe if somebody's mean to you, maybe they had a bad day. Okay, that goes about one inch in the corporate world and certainly in television news. You've got to be out there fighting. You've got to shove microphones in people's faces. And I wanted it so badly, but it was so against the nature that I had been raised with. But I thought to
Yes.
myself, I've got to change. So this part of you and your journey is really interesting to me.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, look, I look back at my audition footage, and I couldn't even tell you or recognize who that 21-year-old young woman was. Like when they would interview me, I was so nervous. I'll never forget it. Like and this is what the start of also the next chapter of when, you know, when I was actively drinking. And, you know, I've been sober now for 5.5 years, but we'll get there. So, you know, I would go into these
Congratulations.
audition rooms. Thank you. So many things. I'm like an onion. There's so many layers. And I would go on to these audition rooms, and it would take everything out of the producer to just get me to say a complete sentence and do it with conviction. Like my voice, I don't know, because I tend to be a little bit of a chameleon back then. And so I had like a weird slight English accent. My voice was very soft. And I really clearly didn't know who that young woman was, you know, back then. And I have to say, because of actual, you know, training, like media training, face on, like this is it. Like there was no actual training. It was kind of like, this is what it is, and you have to get with it. That was the experience. And just having, you know, been on the show for so many seasons, after every season, I just became stronger and stronger and started to learn more and more about myself, and it came into my own. And obviously, you know, we all have chapters in our lives. And the one valuable lesson I've learned, or many, but this is one of them, you can't change anybody but yourself. And that's it.
Amen. Absolutely. This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/claimant. Just go to Indeed.com/claimant right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/claimant. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And Cheryl, so then you win, but you're starting to work with these celebrity contestants, right? And you've worked with some really interesting people. Emmett Smith, these are pro athletes. Olympic swimmer Ryan Lochte, obviously Ray Lewis of the Ravens. Then Rob Kardashian, AJ McLean, Jack Osborne.
Shadow Jocinko.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Which one of them, and I have different questions about all of them, but which one of them began completely unable to do it and then ended with such talent that you were blown away?
You know, it's all psychological, this show. I think not a lot of, this is why I have my podcast, because, you know, the fans who have been so loyal to us over the decades, it's like people just think this is a dance show, but it's really not. It's deeper than that. And so for me, the biggest, I would say, for like satisfaction for me is when I get somebody like a Jack Osborne or a Rob Kardashian who may not have 100% confidence in themselves. I mean, especially Rob, like it was pulling teeth to get him into the rehearsal space in the beginning, because you can clearly tell back then that he didn't want to do this. He was kind of forced into it at the beginning. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't want to be in the spotlight. He just never did. And I don't think he still wants to, and to this day. But what was so satisfying and so, I was so proud to watch him grow into him, his own identity and his own manhood, if you like to call it that way. I mean, like, he just walked out with like zero confidence. And then as the weeks progressed, you could tell his posture was different. Like, it's a direct correlation, you know, with how you hold yourself in your body and what you exude out into the public. And I believe that whether or not you believe it, it's actually, I heard a neuroscientist say recently that your brain can't tell the difference between a lie and the truth. And that has a lot to do with the way you hold yourself in your body as well. If you think about it, if you walk into a meeting or you walk into a live show like Dancing with the Stars, if your posture says insecurity all over it,
oh yeah,
then that's what it's going to be, right? So you can trick your brain and you can actually stand tall and you will soon feel confident. You will feel secure.
Let me have you put on your teacher hat. How do you begin teaching someone? For example, I've never ballroom danced and I watched Silver Lining Playbook and I'm thinking, how did Jennifer Lawrence do that? And she had such great moves. And then it was cute as Bradley Cooper also had to learn, but I always felt like I could never do that. How do you take the first step in teaching someone?
Well, if you know how to walk, I would say, then you know how to ballroom dance. It's very, as much as, you know, look, this is also the advantage of partner dancing. It's like right away, if you were to walk into my rehearsal space and let's say you were my partner, I would first ask you if you have any dance experience. I put some music on, see if you have musicality naturally in your body. And I would right away start teaching you the foundation of whatever style it is, whether it's standard or the Latin dances. And, you know, there's something like right away, I can even tell with shaking someone's hand how this person's going to perform. Right. So if this person shakes your hand and it's not very firm, it's not confident, if the person doesn't look at you in the eyes, you can tell that he or she is insecure, right? They might feel very insecure about themselves. But you know, this is something that you can still train. Like, and the thing with Dancing with the Stars is that, not like, you know, a movie set, this is live, right? So you can take 100 different takes when you are in like Bradley Cooper's shoes, right? Like if it didn't look good, don't worry, take 100, you know. But on Dancing with the Stars, we have a turnaround of 3-4 days. And I say 3-4 days because we have to have our dance completely ready to go, show our director, and they have to choreograph the cameras around
us.
So It is really intense, and it is. And honestly, like for the celebrities that come on here and they have a goal, and the goal, I always say, whoever says they want to win the mirror ball, I apologize in advance, but that requires so much hard work. And that's why you see the couples so emotional. It's also mentally challenging because it is scary and it is, you're completely vulnerable, but it's the people who come on the show who are not scared to be vulnerable because it's a journey. And this is why America loves the show so much, because they go on this journey with you. Hence, for example, Emmett Smith winning versus Mario Lopez. Mario Lopez was already good. What journey was that? There was no journey, you know, but Emmett Smith behind the helmet, how did you know he was so charming? No one knew. They fell in love with this guy who plays football, but then was, you know, named Twinkle Toes by one of the judges. So it's like, you know, people like to root for the underdog, and isn't that in life as well, right?
Also, somebody who embraces it, is self-deprecating, makes fun of themselves in the process, but is willing to put in the work. How many hours a day over those 3 to 4 days do you practice with this contestant of each season?
Well, I always say it's not about what they do in the studio. It's about what they do at home after we call it quits. Because, like, are you memorizing your choreography so that the next day you come in and I can just move on and start layering the cake, right? Like, we have to build a foundation. And if I have someone who just does the work in the studio for 4 hours, and now there's a limit because of all the injuries that were happening. But yes, 4 hours is maximum. However, I'm always like, I have to choreograph and I'm sending videos in the downtime to my partner, depending on how committed he is.
Yeah.
Like if I have to force it down their throat and just say, don't forget to look at the video. And this is why I loved rehearsing and dancing with athletes, because you don't have to tell them any of this. They do the work. And that's why they're the best at what they do.
Oh, my gosh. Athletes, boy, they work through all kinds of pain. What have you worked through? What have you danced through on live television?
Oh, goodness. How long do you got? Okay. I've danced through a lot of personal pain. I think, you know, look, from... I can't even say to this day I'm completely healed from all my traumas. That is not the case. I am a work in progress, and I will be for the rest of my life. But like, for as far as Dancing with the Stars goes, I mean, I would say, you know, the show became very popular. We used to get Super Bowl ratings back in season three. We got like 35 million viewers for the finale. And from then on, my life changed as far as being in the spotlight. But I still am not 100% comfortable, you know, with paparazzi or with like going to red carpets. It's very strange for me. And I am naturally, as far as this might be to believe, but I'm very much an introvert. And, you know, when I have to turn it on, I will, because I'm trained to do this, right? Whether it is doing an interview or whether it is performing in front of millions of people. But, you know, personally, behind all of the lights, camera action, it's just me. I love being home. I have social anxiety. I also am an addict, and I've been, as I said, sober for 5.5 years. There was a whole thing, I would say in the earlier seasons, of fat shaming. And so I suffer from body dysmorphia. And I think it happened even prior to my time on Dancing with the Stars. Mm. And when you're in the spotlight, you know, in that sense, and, you know, I still, even though I'm not on the show anymore and retired last year, it still happens, right? So it's hard for me not to take some things personal when people talk about you or kind of like look for validation. Because like, if you think about it, in all the entertainment business, whatever it is that you do, we look for validation. Like you know, as a dancer, you look for it regardless of, yes, we also love it and it's an art form and we love performing, but why, right? And so it's been interesting because during this time, this past year, it's like, I had to relearn who I am and my identity, and knowing that my identity is not outside of myself. Like, it's not defined by Dancing with the Stars. And, you know, during the show, there's so much drama with like people thinking I was hooking up with my partners to Ryan Lochte, you know, that whole thing with protesters walking onto the floor during the premiere thinking, and I thought for sure this guy was armed. I mean, there's so much stuff. Mm. And so much of my life, I would say 16 years, that's how long, or 17 years I was on the show. That's a good chunk of my life, right? So far, I'm 39. So a lot has happened. Yes. I also danced through a divorce. I danced Through breakups, I've danced through, just a lot of challenges, but thank God I had dance at that time, right?
Right. And Cheryl, when I think about some of the partners that you've had, I also think about your actual husband. And you danced through a tough divorce, didn't you? How did you face the cameras during that time?
I mean, there was no, I never thought in my head that I wasn't going to have to face the cameras. This was, that was my personal life. And then this was my career. And I tried as much as possible to separate the two, but I also am an open book. And I believe that when I am open and I choose to be vulnerable, it is healing. It takes the shame and guilt away. And I realize that. And so that is my reason for being so open, because I do know as well that somebody is going through something similar and
Yeah.
will be listening to this interview or any other interviews I've done. And if I could just help one person feel like they're not alone, that's always has been my goal. I think this is why I've been blessed with a platform like I have.
Oh, you are helping people as you speak. I know this audience is soaking up your story. I want to know, as we finish up this conversation, I have a thing for Cody Rigsby. He is my favorite
I
Peloton
thought
teacher.
so after you said you just finished Peloton.
Is the cutest. He's so funny. Oh my gosh. But that guy can dance. You could tell, even as he sits there on the bike, you can tell he's got the moves. So, what was it like dancing with Cody?
Oh, Cody is such a wonderful man. I mean, he really is such a bright light. During that time, it was really tough for me because I was going through, a separate, or I was about to be separated. So it was very rocky, my marriage at that time. And he was there for me through it all. He is exactly who you see when you take his class, when you take his Peloton class. And but also, he's a hard worker. And I always say this: look, people with who can dance already, it doesn't necessarily help them, because ballroom is such a different beast that you're dealing with, that like it's almost harder to untrain the brain than it is to train it. Hence why athletes are so good, because they have nothing to compare it to. Like when I dance with AJ McLean from the Backstreet Boys, same thing. It's just harder to untrain your body, that whatever your body's been moving or how it's been moving the past decade or two, it's really challenging. But Cody embraced it all. We also got COVID. I think I gave COVID to Cody because we were traveling back and forth from Brooklyn to at Los Angeles, because he still had to continue his Peloton classes, obviously. And it was at the height of COVID. So it was interesting. We both, I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, but we danced in our living rooms, and he was just such a
Oh.
trooper, you know?
Oh my gosh. You are an inspiration, and I really just want to press home this point. You guys, look what she did, and it was against her grain. If you think that you can't achieve your actual dream because it's just not who you are, if it means enough to you, am I right, Cheryl? You gotta change who you are to really
Absolutely.
reach that dream, right?
Yes. And to be honest, my dream was never to be on TV, but my dream was to not let my past or my trauma define who I was. And whatever that led me to is whatever it led me to. But it's one step at a time, just like the, AA program. It really is one foot in front of the other, like a dance routine, like life. No matter what, we all evolve, whether you like it or not. It's going to happen. So you can either kick and scream and have it be a hard time, like, and not go and go against life in general, or you can go with the flow in that sense. And it's like, you just sometimes it's overwhelming when you have a dream. I understand, like, it's like, oh, how am I going to get there? One foot in front of the other, and just do it with grace and forgiveness of yourself and with ease.
Cheryl, this message is so valuable to so many people out there. And by the way, for all of you listening, if there's somebody you know who wants to reach for something but just can't get it together or doesn't believe in themselves, please tell them to listen to Cheryl and her story. This to me is so incredibly valuable. You can change your destiny. You hold the pen to write your own story. You know, don't sit there and say, oh, this person didn't give me the chance or this boss wasn't helpful to me. No. You write your own story just like Cheryl did. Amazing. And speaking of which, Cheryl's incredible. She's got a new podcast I hope you guys get a chance to listen to. It's called, this is the best title, Sex Lies and Spray Tans. Okay, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I am incredibly grateful that you take the time to hear these hopefully life-changing stories. I'll see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on The Claiming Countdown. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. January 26th, 1988 was a cold and suspiciously quiet night at the Indianapolis Police Department, but the frigid night took a chilling turn with news of a triple homicide. This week, I'm joined by retired Sergeant Judd Green for a look back at this savage case. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.